It'll be an absolute shellacking.
Broadcasting live from the Annex Wealth Management Studios at The Avenue, it's time for Point Taken. Here are your hosts, Steve Scafidi and Kristen Bry.
And happy Wednesday, everybody. We are up on YouTube and the live stream at WTMJ.com. Kristen Bry alongside, and we're going to get to a lot of important political stuff, but there's a special birthday today.
Special birthday.
Debbie Bry.
Happy birthday, Mom. I don't know if she's listening or not.
Wake up, Debbie Bry.
No, she's awake. Oh, okay. I think she was en route to go pick up my brother from the airport or something.
I thought maybe she partied.
We tried FaceTiming this morning. No. Did not answer.
Maybe she partied a little hard for her birthday last night.
Maybe she did.
Still hanging it out there at whatever age she is. I'm not going to say a woman's
age. I'm not going to say it.
Except yours, because you're 40.
I am 40.
Right on the head. All right. So we're going to look ahead. Just like, what's her face? The candidate for governor.
Onwards?
Yeah, we're going to look onward.
Not forward, onwards.
We're going to look onward.
Sarah Rodriguez. Yeah.
The President of the United States, I have a lot of thoughts on this, and I know you'll look.
What?
You'll roll your eyes a few times, but the President of the United States is going to address the country on lots of things, although there's a lot of uncertainty about what he's going to say. Originally, it was about the Georgia senators and how their wins were illegitimate, questioning the Georgia votes. Looking back to 2020, that's been out there. Now some social media experts, can you see me air quoting experts? Because I don't believe in that, are saying that perhaps it's a declaration of a national emergency related to the elections, which opens up a whole can of worms when it comes to security, safety, integrity, questions about that, and what this president might do or not do. I want to go to, and hopefully Jazz is ready on this. This is what I'll give you my thoughts after. This is what I think a responsible Republican, and Kentucky Congressman Thomas Massie, I'm not a huge fan of him, but he cuts through the BS. Sorry to the texter who was offended by my use of, you know, that kind of
acronyms.
I did shorten it. I could use the whole, can I use the whole name? I don't think so. No, because that's one of the seven words. All right. Thomas Massie, Kentucky. Listen to what he has to say.
I think it's ironic that we control the House, the Senate, the Supreme Court, and the White House, and we're yelling election fraud. I mean, we won all the damn elections, and we're in charge, and what are we doing with it? We're bankrupting the country, we're starting new wars, we're violating the Constitution, we're not cracking down on the fraud. The problem is not the elections. We won the damn elections. The problem is we're wasting our opportunity that the voters gave us. And the Republicans are going to pay for that in November. It'll be an absolute shellacking if they don't wake up.
For all the election deniers out there, that's a Republican. Pretty conservative dude.
Also a Republican who has nothing to lose because he did lose his primary.
Still a Republican.
Still a Republican. And it's also interesting timing as far as this announcement this week, as far as the memorandum of understanding being over, basically, as like the violence and the attacks are back up in Iran. We're going to talk about it a little bit later. After months of kind of no controversies, in 6 days, three different people have been killed by ICE. Mm-hmm. Two were shot. One was run over by a truck. Mm-hmm. So as far as a new tactic to say, hey, look over here, potential thoughts as far as why this press conference this week, considering the timing of these other events.
It's interesting because I've seen some tide turning among my Republicans and conservative friends, Trump supporter friends, who say this is just as usual crazy talk. Just get on with it, whatever that get on with it means to them. But I'll continue to hammer home this point. He continues to waste our time with nonsense. We're spending so much time talking about the reflecting pool. Come on, dude. You screwed up. You probably drove on it before you should have. There's a way to fix it and a way not to fix it. You chose the way not to fix it. You're continually complaining about other people. Your case is going to get thrown out. The whole redecorating of Washington, D.C. Yeah, improved stuff. But in the silly over-golding of whatever you're trying to accomplish, waste of our time. The tariff back and forth. Now the government has paid back already $81 billion in refunds, which it could double in the next year because that process is really just getting underway. We had our guest friend from Crenson, Hannon International. Name escapes me, but he knows. It is just a back and forth on nonsense. No economic plan of anything to fix affordability. No exit strategy for Iran, which might be an important one, especially when you're talking about a memorandum of understanding that was just signed 2 weeks ago?
No, it was a little more than 2 weeks.
Three weeks, 4 weeks. Okay, month. And then now stolen elections. More nonsense. So my Republican friends, conservative friends, listen to what Thomas Massie says. I don't care if he's not going to be back. He's telling you a truth that you need to listen to. And anybody in Wisconsin who still goes back to 2020, wake your asses up.
My question is, like, what will satisfy, whether it's the president or people who are election deniers, like specifically on the case of 2020, is it arrests? Is it a concession from someone? Like, what is the white whale that you are searching for that will satisfy whatever it is that ails you of considering, like, how many court cases there have been, how many lawsuits there have been filed, the fact that Rudy Giuliani admitted to lying about the Georgia election workers, the Sidney Powell admitting in court no reasonable person would conclude her claim that election fraud were truly statements of fact. Like, there is all of these things that, like, what is it that you are searching for that will ultimately be like, ha-ha?
Well, if you ask the January 6th rioters, they wanted gallows and they wanted someone to be hung for this election loss they blame on all this tampering and interference and shenanigans. If you ask somebody now, I guess it's that they just want anything that Donald Trump says to be true, and they want it so badly that they're willing to accept nothing as evidence. The president has lost these cases. The president continues to basically just move the pieces around. So let's not focus on this. I didn't even mention the fact that he 2 days ago said, we're going to take over the Strait of Hormuz. We're going to charge 20% tariffs or whatever it was. 1 day later, out the window. That suggests to me an occupant of the Oval Office who has no clue about what to do about any of these things and is living in a fake world, this old 1970s New York business world that he apparently thrived in, maybe, maybe not, and trying to use those lessons where you lie about everything, you get as much money as you can for people never paying back, and that's the sort of government we're going to run, and I can back that up by the fact that he started all these weird little meme coins and all these businesses. He made money. Everyone that invested in him lost their shirts. That's the only demonstration I need. I don't care if you think it's Trump derangement syndrome. Face the facts on this, people. It's not good when a president lies. And I would not be shocked if he goes all in on all of this stuff tomorrow night in his Oval Office address, if he's going to be in the Oval Office or somewhere in the White House. It's just more nonsense. You want to look at the problems related to 2020? Look to the president of the United States now. Not Joe Biden. Not local election clerks who are doing a hell of a job every day across this country, in spite of death threats, constant barrage of attacks by citizens, some citizens who believe all this nonsense. Look to the Oval Office. He keeps saying this stuff over and over again, hoping, believing that at some point we'll all believe it. But that core number, I put it at 30%, it may not even be that high anymore, that still believe all of this stuff. Keep shrinking. And the reason, before we go to break, the reason he's going to say it tomorrow night is he knows what's going to happen in November. And the only thing he's got left is to interfere with this election. The very thing, by the way, that he accused other people of doing in 2020. How, I edited myself, how ironic is that? Quick break. In the uncomfortable category for Republicans again, it's going to be a bad day for Republicans, apparently, in the first half hour of the program. Elon Musk may have broken the law by giving away these remember that story?
May have. I feel like that was what the Wisconsin Election Commission decided.
Well, the
Wisconsin, that was their ruling.
He likely broke, you know, this stuff is always like dragged out, right? They referred to two complaints. The Wisconsin Election Commission, sort of the overarching, overriding body, they referred two complaints to the Brown County District Attorney Office, who then can choose to bring criminal charges. Now, I don't know anything about the makeup of the Brown County District Attorney's Office. I should probably look that up at some point. Whether they think this is a real thing or if they think it's one more shenanigans, I don't know. But
or if it's worth trying to prosecute the richest man in the world.
Yeah. And it is possible for those Elon Musk fans to be both the richest man in the world and sometimes the dumbest man in the world. That is possible.
I don't know if he'd ever be the dumbest man in the world.
I don't know. I've heard him talk a few times. So, on its face, I'm going to ask you, handing out $1 million check to someone in the midst of an election, in that case, 2024. We're not lawyers or attorneys.
Seems like bribery.
Doesn't
considering it? You can't even like hand out water or give right. like it's like the one thing you get when you vote is a sticker.
Waterbed.
Right? I mean, so that's the here. Like and even wasn't there a case back in pre-2020 as far as like giving people rides to polling stations as far as so like when this happened, we were on air, right? As far and it was like this feels very illegal. But a reality is, I mean, so the prosecutors have 40 days to report back to the commission on whether or not they're going to prosecute. I would not be surprised if the answer is no, we're not. And whether that's because of politics or because of feasibility. But that gets back to the point of when you're just too rich to ever really be in trouble, to ever have actual consequences to your actions because you can just pay your way out of it. And I don't know. I would imagine it's a fairly bipartisan feeling that that's not fair.
I did look it up. The Brown County District Attorney is David Lassie, a Republican. He did not return a comment to the reporters asking about it. But here's the way I look at it. The Wisconsin Elections Commission is deliberately set up with three Democrats and three Republicans. And they voted 5-1. It wasn't like 3-3 tiebreaker. It was 5-1.
Who was the one vote?
I was just going to look that
Spindell?
Up. Robert Spindell would be my guess, and I'll probably scan through this at some point. But so if you're saying, well, it's Democrats are angry. No, there's at least two Republicans that voted that it may be illegal. So why does this matter? Because we're just talking about the president and some of the things he accuses other people for. This is real stuff. There's no debate about whether $1 million checks were issued because there's a picture of the guy holding a check from Elon Musk at some event, some campaign event. So that's not in debate. Now, I'd be curious to know if the check was cashed. And
I was just thinking that as far as has anyone tracked down the guy who won?
Yeah.
Has he given it? Or do you think he's going to sign an NDA?
Probably. I mean, that's probably how Musk works. But just on its face, it doesn't seem right to me. And the fact that we continually want to debate, you know, how we conduct elections, we should also continue to debate how all of us who are in the media, in the world of politics, conduct ourselves, our behavior, our actions. And this seems to me flying in the face, especially in the climate, because I remember this conversation. I had it many times on an old version of this show by myself, where we were with countless callers complaining about Zuckerbucks. Oh, my God. Zuckerberg poured all this money, get people to vote. So this is $1 million check. He also, and I forgot about this. This is another detail. He offered $100 to voters who signed a position to in opposition to these activist judges, Musk's words, or referred someone else to sign it. More vote buying, more trying to steer our elections by someone who, again, richest man in the world, but sometimes says really stupid, stupid things. I'm just curious in the few minutes, we're going to move on in a little bit, talk about some problems with ICE, which is a consistent theme, got over the last year and a half in this country. But if you think that we are just bashing Trump, let me know if you think that's what it is. I'm trying to give you evidence and fact-based stories that say this is the reality. It's not the political reality you're hearing at your, you know, county board meetings or whatever the hell you're going to, or your internet time listening to experts tell you about what you should think about politics, or Facebook or Twitter. It's actual things. And again, when I see a Wisconsin Election Commission voting 5-1, two Republicans, three Democrats, it suggests to me there might be something to it. That's all. Facts. Sometimes facts are worth it. At least to me and you.
And me.
Quick break. Lots of texts. No surprise. They're all over the place. But, you know, somebody attacked me for an attack that just said, you blame everything on Trump. I don't blame everything on Trump. I wasn't a fan of Joe Biden. Didn't vote for him. He had high inflation.
He's got a new book. Did you see that?
I did not see that. What's that about?
His time as president.
Hmm.
Does it surprise you that Jill Biden's book came out before his?
No, she's smart. I mean,
everyone needs a book.
Educator.
I'm guessing that there's a ghostwriter.
For president? Probably, yeah, because I don't.
I think most of them use ghostwriters.
Even when I used to see him in the White House, all of his speeches were, or his talks to us mayors were always written down for him. And that was, you know, 10 plus years ago. I'm under no illusion that I'm going to change the mind of someone who's an ardent Trump supporter. I'm just asking you to look more closely. there's a superficial layer to the way the president does things. It's most exemplified by his fascination with gold. But there's real questions here. And whatever the president says tomorrow night, I'm worried about that. Because I don't want a national emergency declared over our elections, because I think elections in this country are handled very well.
I agree with that. I also, I'm trying to think of what the actual reaction would be. I think about that. So France lost in the World Cup yesterday.
I saw that. Yeah.
But France is a country that loves to protest, right? And I'm trying to think, would the reaction be if there was a trivial national emergency declared with no real evidence that was set up to actually screw with this fall's elections? Would there be mass protests?
Probably, yeah.
Would you finally go to a protest if that was?
Depends what we're talking about. You're just conjecturing about what it might be.
No, I'm just saying, because it's what is even the reaction at that point, besides potentially the courts stepping in? But that's a looming prediction, right? Obviously, it's speculation. But as far as making something like that big of an announcement of ICE or the National Guard or whatever, is it going to be in all of these swing districts that are toss-ups? What power do you feel like you have as an individual to actually do anything about that?
It's going to be interesting, because I think the president, as much as some of us might not like it, has a lot of power. And his ability to control the area around a polling place to, he would say, fortify against people who are trying to interfere, I think it could cast a wide net of conspiracy about this election. And therefore, whatever happens in November, and most experts that I'm seeing are saying that it's going to be a chance for Democrats to take both houses. And we'll see what happens in the states across this country, because we have a Democratic Socialist running for governor in the state of Wisconsin as well. That would be a shocker. Yeah. So, it's all possible. I just want you to look at the facts and pay close attention. We're going to talk about, you had put this in our outline today about ICE and sort of this continuing story of what's going on. Tragic stories.
Welcome back to Point Taken. I'm Kristen, he's Steve, and it was 5-ish months, kind of felt like a lot of the controversy around ICE after Minnesota felt like it had died down. There was obviously different news stories that we were covering, and obviously back in January, 2 U.S. citizens were killed by ICE, and it was when ICE got, there's a lot of people who changed their feelings about how ICE was operating. Now, to be fair,
let's say their names, Renee Good and Alex Pretty.
Yeah, but to be fair, still where Trump stands on immigration, especially when it comes to border control, is one of his higher rankings when it comes to polling. But there's still this question as far as when you get past the border of new people coming in, how ICE is handling people who are already here. And especially when it comes to traffic stops and unintended targets, which are the two cases of the two men who were shot by ICE in the last week, 10 days, one in Houston, one in Maine, and neither were the intended suspect.
Nope.
Both were traffic stops. And now the reaction, and I will give credit where credit is due, at least for the time being, the ICE is saying they're pausing most vehicle stops in its enforcement operations. NPR, I know, has verified this, but there's not much more confirmation as far as what that actually means.
The president has said yesterday they shouldn't stop.
I know. And one of the things that I was thinking about as far as there is no video because they weren't wearing body cams.
Right.
So there's no video for these two scenarios. And not that when the videos did exist for Alex Pretty and Renee Good, everyone fought over what they were actually seeing with their own eyes. But when there is no video, now we don't really know, can't see for ourselves what actually happened. But at some point, because I think for the second one, for the man who was in Maine, he had documentation. He wasn't even undocumented. And I still maintain that even if you are undocumented, that isn't a reason for you to be shot. Especially,
of course not.
Right? And especially because from what the testimony is, it was not that they had any lethal force where they needed to be stopped
against the law enforcement.
Yeah. And so this feels to me, because there is no video, there is not going to be the same amount of outrage. I mean, we're obviously talking about it, but it is not as overwhelming as when a video like that can be shared. And it also indicates to me, like, has anything actually changed since January?
No. I mean, obviously the leadership at ICE has changed because that individual now retired, I think, as a result of what happened on the streets of Minneapolis. None of this is good. I mean, we were promised by this president that he was going to take the criminals off the streets. I don't think anybody's shedding any tears over a drug dealer from wherever that's taken off the streets as part of this process. I think we'd all cheer loudly. This is actually, as you said in your lead up, a positive polling place for Donald Trump. People are in some ways encouraged by the crackdown. But when you continually, I'll use the word slaughter, innocent people, for whether it's a misunderstanding, an overuse of aggressive force, I'm not sure what's going on. And oh, by the way, there is a solution. Follow the law as written. Due process. Law enforcement, you have rules and codes of conduct. Just because it's ICE doesn't mean you throw all that out the window. I did a podcast with James Santel and Matt O'Neill on this very issue. You don't throw the rules out.
Well, because one of the things that I think is interesting is this was announced on Monday, that Mexico is now demanding criminal investigations into the ICE killings. Because at this point, 17 Mexican nationals have been killed between being shot by ICE or in detention centers. And so there's also going to, the foreign minister of Mexico said last week that Mexico is also going to pursue civil action against the companies that are running some of the detention centers. And I think so often as Americans, we are used to the tables being turned of, you know, us looking into us condemning other human rights violations in other countries. And it's hard for me not to believe that the history books will write this and we will look back at this as being massive human rights violations done by us and our government to people who certainly did not deserve it, let alone were totally innocent and deserved to be here because they had documentation.
No, and you're right. But the problem is it continues to go on, recent cases, and then the ones going back 6 months, 7 months. And as you know, because we talked to legal experts, this stuff is going to be challenged for years. When you have a country versus country, Mexico against the United States, we want to know what's going on. This stuff will just linger forever. It's not goodwill. It's the opposite. And it sort of endangers our relationship. Whatever you think about Mexico, it is a unique country. It has its footprint in our country because we shared territory for a long time. Some would argue we stole some of their territory to create the states of Texas and other places. History's decided that one. But there's a relationship there, and to constantly antagonize on that, and I blame both parties because we screwed around with border policy, immigration, back and forth for years. Politicians have changed their mind on it, including people like Bill Clinton and Nancy Pelosi on that one side, and certainly many, many Republicans have done the same thing. It's just, at some point, the basic rule of law should say to all of us, whether you're in law enforcement, whether you're elected official, whether you're just me and you on the radio or a citizen, there's a rule of law. We should follow it. Otherwise, we have chaos. And when chaos is the rule of law, we get this stuff. And every person that's killed has a family. Every person that's killed has an identity. We should respect that. Now, again, go after the criminals. Drug dealers, no one's going to cheer for them. Last time I checked, none of these people, at least the ones I looked at, were criminals. And they're dead. Does that bother anybody? Because it should. I mean, it bothers me.
Bothers me.
We need to be better than that. And this stuff just, it's mind-boggling that we're still having this conversation. And it's not helpful, again, not to dump on the president, but when he says, after most people acknowledge that ICE is pulling back, he says, I don't think it should pull back at all. What does that say? You don't listen to your experts?
Well, I'm assuming there's conflicting messaging inside the administration, right?
I can name the guy that says that, Stephen
Miller.
Yeah,
there's an inherent tension of campaign promises on a crackdown on all illegal immigration and everyone who was here who's undocumented versus how you tactically do that without human rights violations.
Yeah. we're here because administrations previous didn't do what they needed to do to clarify, clean up the policies. And because, again, politics in general is not providing solutions to these things, now we have chaos where there could be controlled behavior and policy, and we could figure this out. But again, politics being what it is, this is what we get. It's just, it's upsetting to me. These people are individuals who have families. They didn't deserve what was handed to them under this guise of rounding up the criminals. It's just, it's sad for all of us. Thanks for joining us on this Wednesday. Just had to think about it for a second. Middle of the week already. Week is flying by. Don't forget, next week, Kristen is off, so I will be by myself on Monday. Tuesday, Todd Albo is joining me.
Nice.
Always fun. Wednesday, I think by myself. Thursday, Alex Strofe sitting in for an hour. Some pop culture stuff, maybe a little sportsy themes. Obviously, Jeremy Janine. And then Friday, special edition of the Friday panel. Bill and Joe on their own, because you're off all week, and I'm off Friday. Yeah.
So if you love some Bill and Joe, like Steve and Kristen, that is the show for you.
What do you think the margin is on that? Is it like a big group of that?
No, probably not.
No.
I mean, unless there's people who just listen to Friday's show.
I know there are people that do that.
And so, yeah.
Yeah. So I encourage you to tune in. We got some great topics, as always. I gotta tease this real quick. Can I just tease this? Or do you have something more to say on ICE?
No, I mean...
Say it.
It makes me incredibly sad that there's some people who are okay with these kinds of murders. That it's just like, well, shouldn't have been here. And, you know, for the man who, Lorenzo, who was killed in Houston, he's here for 35 years. Like, he predates all of Trump. He predates Biden. A lot of these people, it's not, you know, because people always point back to the 20 million people or however many, like, we've actually verified that came over during Biden's 4 years. And I will be the first to admit that border security was way too lax, and it was terrible. But that is not the sole group who has been targeted by this. This is people who have made an entire life here for decades that predated any of the immigration fight that we've been having in the last 10 years. And it also comes back to blatant racism, right? As far as like, how do you get around these, you know, stop and frisk or these traffic stops? It isn't just based off of what language they're speaking and what they look like.
No, Aaron makes the point, and I get it. It's the criminals that ICE is going after. All talks about what ICE is doing. The discussion should include the criminal charges. Yeah, if they're criminals, absolutely. We're all endorsing that. I mean, who wouldn't?
You know, because DHS claims that 70% of the people that they've detained have criminal records. That number has not been able to be being verified by any news source. Right? Like the news sources, when they go to look at the detention records, that number's way lower of who's actually being detained.
Yeah, trying to get real data out of this administration is going to be challenging. And as I said before in our conversation about, you know, finding out what's going on, it's going to take years to unravel this mess used on purpose. It's not right. And I'm the biggest defender of law enforcement there is in this community. I honor them for a month. But what I know about law enforcement and professionals who do that job in public safety, they want clarity. They don't want inconsistency. They want clarity in the rules of engagement. And we don't have that because they constantly change when you have a leader who's not sure what the rules should be or is listening to people who aren't qualified to provide that advice. Quick break.
Sure.
All right, real quick tease for all the folks who already signed up for our Extra Points newsletter. Thousands of people, thank you very much. Comes out every Sunday. Quick read, fun stuff, recaps, fresh content, things we're reading and watching this week. And we're going to try to do this more often. Bonus content.
Bonus content. You can only get it if you subscribe to the newsletter.
Yeah,
and what is that bonus content this week?
My interview with Brewers outfielder Sal Frelick.
Ooh.
And he was awesome. It was fun. We talked about the team, talked about a new community venture that he's doing. I talked to him once before, a couple seasons ago. He's a fun dude from Massachusetts, Boston guy. I think he went to Boston College, I think he said. It's refreshing for one to talk about sports and cool stuff, but he's doing some really great work. So if you subscribe, you can get that bonus content. It's about a 10-minute interview, nice, easy listen.
Is there video?
No video.
Bummer, because he's very handsome.
Okay, I'll pass that on to Sal when I see
him. I think he knows that.
He probably knows that. But it didn't come up, his attractiveness, but that's a reason if you're...
Great face card.
He's got a great voice, too.
Okay.
And he's actually...
No Boston accent, though, you said.
No, not really. Not a thick Bummer. One. Yeah, he said Massachusetts. He went to Boston College, so maybe... The outlying areas don't have the thickness of the Boston.
Maybe
I don't know. But thanks to people who are signing up. Just text the word extra. It takes you to the easy sign-up page. You can also find it at the bottom of our homepage at WTMJ.com. It's a great read. We love the newsletter. It's one of many ways we sort of expand our listenership. And we also will be doing another overtime this afternoon. Talk about soccer, U.S. soccer.
Yeah.
The future.
What could be if only there was the will?
Where there's a will, there's a way.
But is there will?
I don't know. We'll find out.
Talk about it.
News is next.
Broadcasting live from the Annex Wealth Management Studios at The Avenue, it's time for Point Taken. Here are your hosts, Steve Scafidi and Kristen Braun.
Steve, did you ever consider going into the trades?
No.
Never an option?
No.
Never interest?
I'm intrigued by it because
you work a lot with your hands now.
Yeah, I mean, I do carpentry stuff. I do some minor electrical and plumbing. So, yeah, I would, you know, you never know what you end up doing when you get out of high school. At least most people don't. Some people clearly do. For me, it was a desire to go to four-year college.
Okay.
I was the oldest. My dad had gone to UWM many years earlier, so that was my plan.
Okay. And you studied broadcast journalism?
Yes.
Why didn't you pursue that after college?
Well, I kind of did.
Kind of did.
I worked for the Nielsen TV ratings, which measures broadcast.
Got it. All right. Yeah. Well, and it's interesting because you were in college late 70s, second mm-hmm. half of the 70s?
Late 70s to the 80s.
What was the overwhelming feeling was go to college, or was it still split back then as far as how many people felt like they had to go to college? Because like as a millennial, that was like the predominant feeling of if you weren't planning on going to a four-year college, something was wrong with you.
Yeah, I would say 3 out of 4 probably had that thought. Yeah, and I had many friends that went to college. Not all of them graduated, which probably still happens today, right? You kind of go with one idea and you leave not completing that and maybe thinking about something completely different. I just was intrigued by this story because it was in the New York Times. And first of all, great name for the Mom and Dad, I Want to Be a Welder is a great name for a story. It's long form, as the New York Times does. But the subheadline is really the fascinating part. And Gen Z is, what, 97 to, like, 2010? Yeah, in that age range, born in that period. Gen Z is increasingly turning to trade schools in hopes of future-proofing, great term, their careers against AI. We've talked about AI. But getting their parents and peers on board can be a challenge. That's a big one.
So that's what I think is really interesting about this story is people's internal judgment on the trades, despite the fact that we know it is a trained skill. You can make a lot of money doing it. And when did that shift happen as far as, because I would say it takes, you know, there's some white collar jobs, especially in like marketing. Maybe you have a four-year degree, but it's not necessarily it takes that much more skill or right. training than being a plumber or some of these other jobs. And especially as you start running your own business, like so, I want to dig more into people's maybe like subconscious judgment over what is considered a white collar job or a blue collar job, and where that comes from.
So you think people have this like negative connotation?
I think so because I was trying to be very honest with myself, and I think where I'm at today in my life. Don't like I have a like a great respect for people who work in the trades, and sometimes I have my own, I don't know if jealousy is the right word, but admiration for what it must be like to be like work with your hands and not be in like the information systems and have to be on your phone and have to be staring at a screen, and probably how much better for your mental health that is, and actually moving your body and all these other things that in a trade job I think are probably beneficial. But if I'm being totally honest with myself, like when I was single in my 20s and I was swiping on Tinder or whatever dating app I was on,
wow.
Like if I would have come across someone who was like in their profile said plumber, would that have gotten me to swipe right as quickly as someone who was like a partner at a VC firm or something like that?
You made a judgment.
And if I'm being totally honest, in my 20s, I probably did have some more judgment towards that, especially like in like a dating scenario. Did you know, and I don't know where that comes from.
Well, did you know a lot of people who worked? Like, I know a lot of people worked in the trades. They didn't go to college after high school. And I know carpenters, electricians, plumbers. I know all these people. And they've had wonderful lives, raised their families, made a great living. Some of them own their own businesses. I knew. Did you know those people?
In my 20s in San Francisco, no. I know way more now.
Yeah.
I actually know someone who, there was a journalist at Journal Sentinel who left Journal Sentinel, and now she's a plumber. She's actually working with the people, the group that's building the new public museum or whatever the, what's the new public museum's name? Something not as
I call it
catchy.
The new museum.
Yeah. But I ran into her at Locust Street Festival, and I was like, how's the new career going? And she loves it. And for her, she was like ADHD, like sitting at a computer all day, writing, like it was not good for my brain. And she's loving learning this skill and being a plumber.
So as part of doing the research, I love that story, by the way. I just started looking up stuff. So if you look at where the jobs are now, whatever your background, nursing, no surprise, need people to do that. But then list the next seven: skilled trades, construction, electricians, plumbers, HVAC, manufacturing techs, which can mean a lot of things in a lot of different industries. That's where the jobs are. That's the biggest reason why Gen Z or any generation should probably be thinking long and hard about the trades, including high schools and high school guidance counselors, as much as they... I felt when I was in high school, they made the push to a four-year. It felt like that.
Yeah, same here.
Yeah, God bless them, but I mean, that's sort of what I felt. And obviously based on your aptitude, how you did in high school, that's all real. But there's that reality. And at the same time, people who are either pursuing a degree in a four-year or have one, they're not taking jobs because they're worried about things like their student loan payments. They want to have a career in their field. They think that might negatively impact if they do something else. So there's this weird disconnect out there. And I think Gen Z appropriately is looking at that, and any generation after that. What's the one after Gen Z?
Alpha.
Yeah. That's where you got to be thinking about. And I'll tell you a quick story before the break. One of my neighbors, lovely man, great guy, great neighbor, great family. His two sons, smart kids, high school. One, I think one's a senior, one's like either a freshman or a sophomore. They're both telling their parents they're going into the trades. One's HVAC, one's, I think, a plumber. They want a steady job, mm-hmm. steady income, AI-proof position. And their dad works in the medical healthcare, and AI is transforming healthcare.
So what was the reaction?
He loved it.
Oh, good.
Yeah, he was excited.
Because that was what was surprising to me in this New York Times article, was how many people are feeling like they have to sell the idea to their parents. And so that's what I want to dig in. Like, for you listening right now, 855-616-1620, do you feel like there is internal judgment towards going to the trades versus going to a four-year college? Or not even the trades, doing something else entirely that doesn't necessarily require a four-year school. Like, is there still, despite the fact that we know that student loans are crazy, that there's a lot of reform that probably has to happen to the four-year university route, but yet there's still this, like, implied gold standard that we apply to it? And do you feel like you personally, if you're being totally honest, also hold that feeling?
What's
so
that
let's
number?
Know. 855-616-1620. Welcome back to Point Taken. I'm Kristen, he's Steve. We are talking about not only just the trades, because that is a new, is it enough to say a trend?
Yes.
A trend of Gen Z looking at the job landscape, understanding the AI revolution is coming, and understanding that when you go to a four-year school, the amount of debt you take on with no guarantee of a job afterwards, there is more and more of an appeal to start getting trained in skilled labor and enter the trades. But specifically in this New York Times article that's documenting this trend, there is this judgment that a lot of the people who were interviewed for it feel like they were getting from their parents, some of their friends, some of their counselors, as far as this push still that you need to go to a four-year university because that's what's best for you. I say that in air quotes for anyone who's not actually watching the live stream. And it is interesting of, like, despite the fact, I mean, they were saying that some of these people make $90,000, which is a lot more than a fair amount of white collar jobs. I know some people make that's like $50,000, $60,000 sitting in an office.
Marketing people aren't making that.
Yeah. And so, like, this internalized judgment or stereotypes we have over going to a four-year school and whatever jobs that can lead to, some of which are going to be very high paying, versus trades, but also versus like service industry, which is, you know, especially once you get to high-end restaurants, you can make a lot of money there too. And
waitering.
Is it because of bartending, the assumption over like intellectual aptitude, or like where does the judgment come from?
I think that's part of it. I just don't have it. And I looked up the trend. I mean, less people are going. It's still 6 out of 10 go to 4 years in university out of high school. But the trend is switching. It's dropping. I think it dropped 6% over the last. It's dropping. Trade school enrollment ticking up. So the trend is towards trade school. But if you're asking me why, I think there is still a negative connotation. It's blue collar work. And we've raised cultures who maybe don't appreciate getting your hands dirty. Is that unfair?
That's what I'm trying to pick apart.
I'm not in that generation, so I don't know. But I mean, for me, that's what it feels like.
But it's also interesting because it's just. Did you ever see? Oh my god, I'm totally blank on the Julia Roberts movie when the world is ending. I'm totally blanking on it, but you know what I'm talking about. Yes. Netflix a couple years ago,
right?
And part of the crux of that movie is the fact that Ethan Hawke, who plays Julia Roberts' husband, like at some point in the movie, I'm not. Kind of spoilers, but not really. He figures out, like, he can't do anything.
He can't do anything.
Right? Like, he doesn't know how to do anything with his hands when it comes to, like, any kind of survival skills whatsoever, mm-hmm. versus Kevin Bacon, who's in the movie, who is, like, a survivalist. And there is something to be said as far as who do you want in your back corner as things, like, continue to evolve, of having actual skill sets when it comes to fixing things in your house. And so, versus, like, I can send a really good email.
Yeah, you don't need a marketing person when your roof's collapsed. That's not very helpful. You don't need to spin the story or tell it in a different way. You need your roof fixed. And folks who do real work, and I don't mean but to say to offend anybody, that's real work. And getting your hands dirty can be just that. It's you get dirty, you're sweating. You think air conditioning guys are loving the weather they're working in lately? Because I can guarantee you when you demand a lot of your AC unit, they fail. And then you got to go out. I basically walked outside yesterday afternoon and said, not for me, and I love the outdoors. It was crazy hot. Imagine working in that, being a roofer. There's guys roofing houses in this stuff. It's nuts. But someone's got to do the work. And if parents, we just had this conversation about parents and education yesterday. Parents have to be part of this answer.
As far as being more open-minded about your kid's future?
You can't feel, because you went to Madison and your husband went to, pick a college, Notre Dame, you can't be disappointed.
Whitewater. The Harvard of the Midwest, as my husband likes to say.
Is that what they call
That's
it?
What Michael Sampson calls it.
Is that because he went there?
Yeah.
I figured. you have to be more open-minded. Every kid, I'm told all the time, every kid's unique. They have their own experiences, their own journeys to take. Let them take this journey. And I want to highlight real quick, there's a lot of local school districts that are actually doing this. They're offering more trade-related coursework. And in the case of, I think, Oak Creek and Franklin, for sure, because I've seen a lot of coverage on this, every year they build a house, the kids in the schools, Oak Creek and Franklin, joint venture.
Is it through Habitat for Humanity?
I don't want to say because I don't know. I don't know. But they utilize the tradesmen who help them, teach the kids the skills, and from the ground up, putting the basement all the way up to a finished product to the sale, these kids are building one house every
year. That's
really cool. Isn't that wild? We didn't even have that option. I would have loved to take it because I had a couple carpentry classes in high school, but that was it. I love carpentry. I make stuff all the time now. I'm fascinated by it.
I think I had a woodworking class in like eighth grade at Cherokee. We had some kind of like machines with like saws and stuff like that, but nothing in high school.
We had home ec too. I love that. You got to cook. You got to make an apron.
Did you get to sew something?
We sewed an apron.
Was it with a sewing machine or did you do it with your hands?
Sewing machine. And some guy in my class, we just had our 50th high school reunion, which I couldn't attend because I was out of the country, but somebody posted a picture. They still had their apron 50 years later. That suggests two things. One, you forgot about it for 50 years, or two, you know.
Holding on to too much.
Yeah, come on. Come on. Dude, you never wore it, so it's still in mint condition. What's going on with that? Anyway, love to get your thoughts. 855-616-1620. It's sort of a, you know, piling on the conversation we had yesterday. I think parents have a role to play here, as well as educational systems, right? We should start emphasizing this stuff. And I think it's happening. That's why I brought up the building the home example from Oak Creek and Franklin School District. I think it's a great opportunity. And I know this, that work's not going away. There's more and more stuff to do, less people doing it. So here's an opportunity. And just doing a quick Google search, I mean, with starting pay in the 50,000 range, it's pretty good. And that's the starting salary for someone who's a certified electrician, plumber, or HVAC. So that's the way I would suggest it. What do you think? 855-616-1620. Quick break on Point Taken on this Wednesday on 620 WTMJ.
Got a couple minutes before the bottom of the hour news. Got a lot of text on this topic of trades versus four-year education versus service industry. And from the 414, PJ says, "Hi, as a skilled union trades, I earned a good wage, hard work, and by late 50s, early 60s, a body that is pretty beat up from lifting, bending, stretching, etc. We work hard, but enjoy and look forward to the challenges of the work almost every day, unlike the office workers I run into. Have a good day, PJ." And I think that is something true, because obviously, if you have an injury and you work in a some kind of physical labor job like that, it's a much bigger threat to your income than, you know, you can have a torn Achilles or whatever and still go sit in an office.
I'm not saying it's an easy route.
No.
It's a different route. This one from the 414, I'm not sure if this is true or not, but I'm going to read it because the text took the time to send it in. Tulsa opened up a trade high school with the East High School like 15 years ago. Had to shut it down after a couple of years because the push was college. I hope that's not true, because I'm not saying you have to do one or the other. I'm saying make the best decision for you, with your parents obviously being part of the decision, and what you think gives you the best chance for success and what makes you happy. So I just want trades to be appreciated, because we're going to need these people. And if we're talking about AI, I alluded to that at the beginning, or you did, it is one area where AI may impact the office side of the trades, but they're not going to go fix an air conditioner.
But it's also, think about all of the different jobs that we became much more appreciative of when the world was shut down during COVID.
Yeah.
You know what just popped in my brain? Of someone who's a dog groomer.
Yep.
Right? That's a skill set.
Mm-hmm.
I certainly don't know how to do it. Probably wouldn't be very
good
at it. Especially with the little dogs, when they're doing the anal glands and stuff like that. That's not a job I want to do.
Let the record show, she said anal glands at 11:29:54.
But I'm just saying, there is so many different jobs that I think you don't necessarily need a four-year university degree for. And as far as all of the different services that we need that we don't know how to do ourselves, we need those jobs. And so I think a lot of it is coming back to our own stigma and judgment and letting that go.
Yeah.
Let people live.
Yeah. Pick the right job for you, with some advice from professionals and your parents. All right. Fun one. Admittedly, I'm going to go off, just so you know. We're going to talk about it. We're going to talk about it after the news, which is next. All right, I saw this headline last night, and I sent it to you right away on our text exchange. House passes bill to ditch the switch and make daylight savings time permanent. I've been on this thing for years.
So they're making this bill says daylight. So what we're doing right now is what they want to make permanent, yes. Not standard time.
And I sent you an explainer what that means. So in winter, the sun wouldn't rise here in Milwaukee till 8:20 on a couple days. In northern Wisconsin, it could approach 9 a.m. till it's sunny out, or the sun comes up. Children, commuters would be in the dark in the morning. Now, no one cares about what happens in the afternoon right now because it's dark at 4:30. Sunsets would move to 5:20 in the winter, which I'm a big fan of, because nighttime is when people are off work and doing things. I've been on this for years, and I'm on the right side. How do I know that? Because I looked up the numbers. 1 in 8 Americans support the idea of not having to change the clocks. It's mixed on.
So one in eight Americans wants to keep it how it is,
yes,
now.
Yeah.
Which goes spring forward, fall back.
Yeah. That's not a big number.
It's not a big number.
All right. Now, whether they want permanent daylight savings time or permanent standard time, then it gets a little mixed up. 56% choose permanent daylight savings time, which this bill would do, and which the president supports, which I agree with him. And 40% want the standard time, which sort of makes the start and the end of the day is look a little bit different. This is long overdue. Why do I say that? It is absolutely insane that in this modern day and age, we are still doing this. It's dumb. It's stupid. Everyone can adjust to a different schedule. Do you think I like it sometimes in the summer when the sun comes up at like 5 something? No, but I deal with it, right? Or if I'm retired, I probably wouldn't like that. But I, room darkening shades. You can wear covers for your eyes. Whatever it is.
We have the technology.
We have the technology to deal with it. This idea that people are so resistant. This law, these laws are archaic. But now I know that there's going to be drama because I heard the morning show. They were going back and forth about this stuff. I'm going to choose daylight savings. That's my choice. I have no illusion that this is going to pass because the Senate has to approve it. And the president, he said he'd sign it.
What happened the last time they did this? Was it the Senate?
74. It was basically trying to save energy. Was
but
one
it was
of the reasons.
No, because they passed. I feel like the story last time was, and I forgot, was it the Senate that passed it last time? But like no one had actually read the bill.
Yeah, that's what they said.
It was like
yeah.
back in like early 2020 or right. 2019 or something, right. Where it was like, oh, like it passed with flying colors, but then everyone's like, wait, what did we just sign?
Yeah, well, you think that's the first time that's happened?
No, I know.
Of course not. So here's what I've gathered from, and I go to people who actually are real doctors, not internet experts. The spring thing, spring forward, lose an hour, basically, right? Because you're losing an hour of sleep.
Yeah.
Causes less sleep, obviously, more fatigue, higher rate of car crash. These are all real data numbers. Small but measurable increase in heart attacks, increase in strokes, more workplace injuries, worsening mood for people. Those are bad things. That's real medical impact.
See, the thing is, I feel like the bigger debate is, should we do daylight savings time
well,
and have
that
be year round or yeah. the standard time? Because like you said, I think most people are sick of the switching back and forth.
Yes. That's exactly right.
But is there data that says which one's actually better for us?
What do you mean data?
The like, data. You were just listing off data.
That's the daylight savings time examples. Yeah, that example.
Well, you were saying, because they're saying that the change is what causes these
This is the spring change, which is daylight savings time. Specifically, that's what I was reading from.
But weren't you saying that the fact is like what they've documented is that the change of the clock is what leads to some health outcomes?
What I'm telling you is the spring has significant medical impact. The fall doesn't. That's what I'm telling you. That's what the data suggests. Think about the fall. What happens in the fall?
You gain an hour, but you're still talking about the change itself.
I'm just telling you what the data shows. The spring one has significant medical impact. Fall doesn't.
I don't think you're understanding what I'm trying to say.
I know exactly what you're saying.
What am I trying to say?
You're trying to say that both are the same.
No,
I'm
not trying to say both are the same.
Tell me what you're
trying to say, is there data, if we were on standard time, so if we were always an hour later, and that was just what we did all year round, is there any argument over that being healthier or less healthy than being in daylight savings time all year round?
I have no idea.
You're looking at the data that has looked at what the change does to our body by going back and forth like that. I'm asking, based on our circadian rhythm, like, is it better for us always to be on standard time?
Yeah, here's why I didn't look that up, because that's not what they're proposing. They're proposing to use daylight savings time. I'm giving you the medical
impact. But because this has gone on for so long, there's also people who have stuck to standard time. I mean, only a third of the world maintains the custom of going back and forth. So there's a bunch of different countries that are just on standard time.
Yes, there's all kinds of, there's states in our country that don't even do this, which, bravo, that's awesome. And there's countries that don't do it as well. All I'm saying is, what I've gleaned from at least 10 years of having this conversation, I should do whole hours on this because people go nuts about this stuff. We are so resistant to change, even dumb, archaic things like this. People, oh my God, you're going to disrupt everybody. It actually is an opportunity. I put it in the outline. It's an opportunity for schools to reevaluate their start times. Maybe kids and parents are telling you we shouldn't start at 7:15 a.m. or 7:30 a.m. Maybe that's wrong. All of these things could be reconsidered, but let's have a standard and just stick to it. And I am supporting the president on this because he's supportive of my idea.
Your idea.
That I had many years ago.
Okay.
Yeah.
This all came back to Steve Scafidi.
It did. That's my
argument. No one was talking about this before 2016.
We got a lot of texts on it. We'll probably get to some of those. What do you think? I say yes. Let's go to daylight savings time year round. I told you what the impact is on your schedule. I think we're all smart enough and technology friendly enough to adjust to the change. We'll figure it out after a few years. We won't even realize that we did it. It'll just be normal. And then the next generation, remember when they used to change? Wasn't that stupid? They used to change their clocks. Wasn't that dumb? You had to like physically take the clock off the wall, turn that little dial.
They won't even have those clocks anymore in the future.
I don't know. I have like three of them in my house, and I don't like changing them. That's my reality. Steve ruled the world. Break.
All right. Is it really a talk radio show if you don't complain about daylight savings time?
And I'm not complaining. The news. The news was the House passed it.
I know. It is a news story. And so it does seem like there may not be the support there in the Senate. We're obviously talking about yesterday the House passed changing permanently for the U.S. to be on daylight savings time, which is what we're on right now. So when the sun would set later. But then in the winter, places like Bismarck, North Dakota, the sun wouldn't rise until like 9:30 a.m.
Yeah, I don't care. Because there's no concern for the end of the day when it's light out later. I mean, you can, whatever you're mad about, you can
but
be mad about
But I think that's what your health studies that you were showing, far as how the sun reacts to our body and how our body gets going in the morning.
The amount of sun's the same. It's just the time of the clock. The impact doesn't change. The impact is losing the half hour. That causes the stress. I don't know if we can make it any clearer than that.
All right. Anyways, so Senator Cotton still opposes the permanent daylight savings time bill, and he's not alone. Apparently, Thune, Wickler, Fisher, Moran, Sullivan, Budd, Sheehy, Klobuchar, Peters, Duckworth, all these like Midwest, basically senators.
Midwest are always
are
against
also,
it.
Saying that it's a no-go.
Stuck in the mud with Midwesterners. They're always against it. And they always cite farmers. Farmers do a lot of things in the dark. I don't think they care about that.
Okay.
Yeah. I just.
Do you think we'll get this in your lifetime?
Yeah. Because it's archaic and dumb. And I'm, as much as people say I'm a, like, thanks for the boomer attacks, which whenever I say anything that challenges anyone's opinion, I get the boomer thing. And I'm a boomer, so I'm proud of it. It's going to happen. We're gonna abandon some of this archaic stuff that exists for no real reason other than we're used to it or it's a habit. That's the change that's coming for people. So get up out of your chair. Eat something else other than a fish fry on Friday. Drink something else other than an old-fashioned on Friday. Have a Negroni. They're delicious, especially if you're old. And get over your clock fascination where we do the dancing with clocks twice a year. It's dumb. And I respect this texter who said his wife apparently collects clocks. He's got to change all these damn clocks twice a year. Stop wasting his time. I think it's his time, yeah. Now, someone said, consult somebody from the medical college. I understand there's difference of opinion on it. I cited the opinion. I read three articles this morning on this. I gave you what they said about the actual physical change to people in the spring when you lose an hour. That's real. There is not the same impact in the fall because you gain an hour. Why is it so
hard? But again, because you're talking about the change. It's like for people who travel a lot. Like there's been many studies done as people who travel internationally a lot and what that does to their body to constantly be in different time zones.
You're telling me that?
I understand, but that's what I'm saying. And mm-hmm. So there is health data that is showing the change is what's detrimental, not that daylight savings time is the better rhythm to be on, is what you cited.
I said it like three times. The biggest impact is the daylight savings time in spring. None of the change
to it.
Yeah, is the one in fall is not the same. You're not hearing me. Is what you're not doing. I'm gonna send you all the articles. I'm gonna make you do homework on it.
Okay.
All right. So we don't even in this show we don't agree. So why would we think it's gonna happen? Probably won't. But again, it's great fodder for radio talk. What do you think? Keep sending the text. Lots of text. Keep coming in. And I could care less about Bismarck. I've been there a couple of times. It's a nice city, but whether it's 8:30, 9:30, don't care. Sure. One more time, if you're a subscriber to the Extra Points newsletter, you can get my Sal Frelick interview on Sunday morning, delivered right to your inbox. Just text the word extra, E-X-T-R-A, to 855-616-1620. It's a great interview. He's a fun guy, great player. He talks about the team a lot and some of the dynamics, the challenges.
The power of friendship back?
Is the power of friendship
back? Are they talking about that as much this year? Because I feel like that was a big thing last year, right?
He loves his teammates, and he loves the community. And that's one of the reasons I talked to him, because he's doing a new community venture along with Best Buddies, who I'm a big fan of and worked with in the past. I would say that on the subject we just essentially got done talking about, as with everything, there's difference of opinion. I respect that. Everyone's got a different idea about what they think. I just want it to be looked at, and if they vote to not do it, so be it. It's settled. That's how we decide things. It actually is interesting. They're actually doing something, which is something that Congress doesn't spend a lot of time doing. I would argue they should probably spend some time debating
doing other things,
more important topics. Wouldn't you think so?
I agree.
Economic policy, tariff policy.
Immigration policy.
Immigration policy. I'm just reading this because it said they agree with me. I agree with Steve. My parents have difficulty changing their clocks in the microwave. That's a boomer problem. Alarm clocks as well. They go weeks without knowing the time until someone comes to visit. Real life. Elderly. Let's not dismiss the advanced elderly, the 85-year-olds, the 90. It's a challenge for them.
No, I'm not debating whether we should keep changing back and forth. I'm not saying, because I agree that we should stick to one. I am unclear on which one is better to stick to.
Yeah, and I'm just dealing with
daylight savings.
I'm just dealing with the legislation
versus
here.
Standard.
Yeah,
and
I think that your conversation is one international and much broader, and there's massive disagreement on it.
Well, it's also because people who live close to the equator don't have to deal with this at all.
Yeah, it's six a.m.
Every day is the same. Basically, it's the same throughout the year.
It's also 110 degrees in many of those places, especially in Africa. Is that good? I don't know if you like heat. Ultimately, what do you think? Are they going to pass it or not?
No.
Okay. I don't know.
It doesn't seem like they have the votes in the Senate.
You get enough Democratic senators who don't live in the Midwest, maybe. You know, he only needs a majority. Maybe. Oh, look at that. I love you, Steve. Who sent that in? I love you back. And someone did an explainer to you about why you're not hearing me. Anyway, we're going to be back.
We're just talking past each other today.
No, I think I'm hearing what you. I didn't realize you were going international with this.
No,
with the story.
This is what I was saying. There is three different scenarios. There is people who live fully in daylight savings time, fully in standard time, and then the countries like ours that goes back and forth. Mm-hmm. And so what I was trying to get clarity on is the studies you were citing, what was the detriment? Was it the change?
Yes.
Yes. And so that's what I was asking to get clarity on, because there is a separate comparison of what is better, people who live full-time in standard time.
Yeah, but that's not what we're debating.
Or full-time in daylight savings
time. That's not the bill we're talking about here. Okay. It would have to be a completely new bill to do what you want to do. Which one do you think's best? I guess we'll end it with that. Which the better way?
I don't know, because I haven't done enough research. But it seems like there's a lot of arguments as far as why daylight savings time would not be beneficial, because it sounds, from what I've read initially, that your body getting sunshine in the morning is more important than getting sunshine
at night. I read that in a few places. I still think being light out till 5:30 in the winter would be really beneficial for all of us who live in the Midwest. That's my opinion. Whether it's morning or night, I choose night because I'm working in the morning. That's my take.
All right.
We'll be back tomorrow with more vibrance and aggressive conversation. Chris and Steve, point taken.
It'll be an absolute shellacking.